Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info. And today is Tuesday, December 30th, 2014. This is the last hour of this year, hour 256 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And occasionally, we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to thank James from North Wales for helping to sponsor all the hours on the World Wide Web. And for Lawrence from Dublin, Pennsylvania. And Michael, before I say hello, let me read what Lawrence wrote.
Okay.
Okay, he said, subject was Hello Earth Podcast, Curtis, happy winter solstice. With great honor and enthusiasm, tetraspherical living environments, along with Lawrence Owen, architect, builder design, LLC, has made a contribution to Curtis Cooperman, Michael, and the Hello Earth organization. This contribution and or sponsorship will help keep the podcast coming and allow for better reception and lead to greater audience participation. This program has made wonderful strides in continuing the discussion for a language with our universal partners. How true that is. Thank you, Lawrence. Yeah. As a listener from the beginning of Hello Earth, the podcasts need to be reviewed from time to time to breathe fresh air into them and to also have a greater understanding of them. There is much to be discovered. And he ends with, for your help in opening our minds, hearts, spirits, and sending rejuvenated energy up our spines into our minds. Thanks to a happy and fresh new year. Warmly, Lawrence. Thank you, Lawrence, for hearing and listening all of Michael's recordings, and thanks for sending your support, because they are needed to host Michael's hours on the World Wide Web. Other planets may not need them, but here on Earth, those things are absolutely necessary. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Curtis.
Hi.
Happy New Year coming around.
Happy New Year coming around in a couple days.
Remember how to say it in Hawaiian?
No, I thought you were going to ask me to.
Haole. Haole, you know?
Haole?
Well, Merry Christmas is Haole Makahiki Ho. Yeah. And
I thought Merry Christmas was Meli Kaliki Maka.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Okay.
That's true. Meli, Meli means merry, yeah. Meli Kaliki Maka. Meli also means music. And Haole Makahiki Ho, which is really to be happy. And Makahiki Ho means continuation. Next one, yeah. Makahiki Ho.
Wow,
which is celebration. They had the Makahiki celebration. It was like Olympics. Right on a New Year's time, they would celebrate all their, you know, sporting events.
Well, a woman I knew on Oahu, she sent her daughter to hula school and also to learn the Hawaiian language.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the Hawaiian language, you know, is the Hawaiians is interesting of how it was preserved. Hawaiian language is a preserved language. It was, you know, if it was left up to just the way of civilization, it's an obsolete language, and just let's forget it, you know. You know, ancient Aramaic is gone, you know, and the closest thing to that, which is the language of the Hebrews in the Middle East. The closest thing to it is the sister language, which is Arabic. And when you think about, you know, the preservation of people's language, that means their culture. is not totally destroyed. And an interesting thing about mm-hmm. the culture of a relatively small people, which had, you know, small group of people, you know, just an island nation, you know? Yeah. Actually, it was a kingdom, the kingdom of Hawaii, and it had a king and a queen and princes.
And a princesses. Palace.
And a palace. And it's still there, the Iolani Palace, a royal palace. And
the, beautiful, too.
Mm-hmm. And the Hawaiians originally had a system of religion which sort of had some roots that seemed to be similar to some of the archaic religions. And they had, you know, a city of refuge, where if you did break a law, if you ran into that city of refuge, which was like a temple area, then the people couldn't get you, you know, if you stayed there. And they actually had things like statutes of limitations, and if it ran out, then you could walk out there free. You could stay there so long. You know, there were certain things that made them have the certain kinds of governmental things. But one of the interesting things is that it's been preserved, and one of the reasons it's been preserved is that they full-heartedly accepted Christianity, and they could pair it with the some of the old teachings of that were left and as a legacy within their culture of the wonderful ruler of the universe, and Christianity came very close to that. And also because of that, was able to help preserve the culture as well as the people. The people have essentially blended and become very hard to find pure Hawaiian people. And they've blended into just about everybody. You know, if you ever ask a local Hawaiian what is their bloodline, they might go down a list, maybe 12. Some of them have some list that are about like 12 people, all 12 different cultures and races, you know, mixed in their bloodline. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a real melting pot. They are, anyway. And the point is that when the people aligned and having favor with under that, I mean, that particular line, it's almost like it comes under, we want to preserve this. You might say the angels are who help motivate individuals to do certain things, motivated certain key people to who were in power to preserve them as a people, their educational system, their culture, and not blot it out. So the language isn't blotted out. It's become sort of, I mean, somewhat bastardized in some ways, but in other ways, it is true. It remains true in its purity. But then, of course, there's those culturalists who want to have it remain in its more savage, uninterrupted manner. You know, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that it's not gone. And this is the point: is that even in light of many other cultures, languages have been lost, cultures have been lost over and over again and eradicated. And it's almost like that's what this concept of the eradication of the Jews in the Middle East by a radical Islamic wanting to rub them out completely off the map, not even being for real. This is something that it's probably not going to be allowed. And it's not probably, but it will not be allowed because it happens to represent a cross-section of the globe which is to be preserved. And that preservation is something that is very interesting because it many times requires participation by the very ones that are to be preserved. In other words, the Hawaiian people, in order for them to be preserved, they had to participate in the you might say, the Christian renewal. So the missionaries who did come over there weren't simply taking their land. I mean, that wasn't their job. They never did that. They brought forth education, reading and writing. First printing press west of the Rockies was was here on the island of Maui in Lahaina. And higher education was here in Lahaina, which at the time was the capital of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So much of the early uplift to the basic tribal, tribal monarchy was performed here on the island of Maui, and it gave the people written history by their own hand. In other words, the Hawaiian people didn't have writing until it was taught to them, and how they wrote it down was in English. And these old letters and old stories have been preserved because the families kept them. Maybe some of them didn't, you know, continue in being the most educated, but others did. Ultimately, they have different intelligences. Some of the Hawaiian people have extremely high intelligence in being with the land and understanding nature. And it was a large group of them that were able to realize tampering with the genetic code was wrong, absolutely wrong. And even if they didn't understand the details, they understand the dangers. And that's probably one of the reasons that the vote went through, that these people who had respected and been in contact with the land as basic, not monoculture modern farmers, but of the ancient method, which was able to feed remarkably millions of people here in Hawaii through a remarkable, and it's a very beautiful culture of taro farming, because the water runs from mountain to sea, and has a beautiful, you know, lush look to it. And it requires a lot of tending, contact with the ground. But these people were victorious with having only $45,000 against something close to 8 million, 7 million, 800 something thousand against them to, you know, keep GMO development here on the island of Maui. Well, these people are special. They were preserved for more weeks than one. And that's one of the fruits of their preservation. On a bigger scope, our planetary environment is made up of people like that all over the place that are getting smashed and crushed down by the political and the corporate powers to try to create a one world government, and orchestrated by, you might say, people in power. And even with great amount of power and great amount of finance, they will not be able to dictate over that. But I'd like to discuss a little bit about those who've been working and essentially gifting to this program in a financial sense are actually walking into a special domain, a special position of, you might say, favor. And the universe favors those who are helping continue the enlightening process. And many of those have realized that in offering to various churches, religions, having these offerings. Particularly in this case, what happens is that those that do give to this, if you do freely give of your heart to furtherance, or just to gift it, making a gift out, I don't want any. I remember being given a gift once from an elderly Hawaiian man, and he had given me $50. And I thought at the time, it was back in the early 70s, as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I refused it. I said, no, I can't take this. And he looked at me in a strange look and he said, I must teach you then. If you do not take this, then I cannot receive the protection and the blessing that will cover this gift and as well as multiply it. For if I give it to you, it is like planting a seed and a tree will grow. So I give it only in good ground, and you are that good ground. So please take it. Without you taking it, I cannot receive any blessing. Wow, did I get scolded? I felt like this old wise man.
Yeah.
You know, I had a job. He was retired. I think, well, you know, and he was taking from what he had. His, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't that much. I didn't think he was. He drove a clunky old car, you know, to church, and and I took it, and he was so happy because it resulted in many things, and some of these things were in the thousands of dollars were covered in medical expenses that were paid somehow through this. It's the right timing, you know, and all kinds of things like that. And these are the kind of favor that happens because of when one gives in a pure heart, because this is how the universe works, sharing. And if you can start doing that, if any of the listeners can start doing that or already have, you will begin to recognize certain favors, certain situations that just seem to happen and are timed so perfectly. And these kinds of things are some of the things that we open to you, because I know for a fact, if you do help this, you will be functioning under the guidance of the Celestials themselves, whether they be flesh and blood Celestial beings, you know, flying around in their own ships, or higher orders of beings of spirit and light that are able to manipulate circumstance and situation and guidance of your and protection of your of you as an individual. This is in my walk, I have always been amazed at this, and I have great confidence that any of you who do give to this program will find that blessedness. And it is the only place within the Holy Bible where God challenges the individual. He says, try me. He says, he allows you. He says, one of the Ten Commandments says, do not, you know, put God to the test. You know, don't take the Lord's name in vain. In concept, don't put him to the test. Except in this area, he says, try me now. And see if you will not receive the blessings. Try me now if you give with that heart. And try. He challenges, try. And see if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour you out blessing, which is really happiness. That word really translates to happiness. And it can be connected to directly to, you know, having resource, which could be directly translated again to having, you know, something like a tangible asset, including money. And those things are, God, it's one of the things I found out, he owes no one. These higher celestial entities owe no one anything. There's no such thing as a debt that they cannot pay. And the greatest fulfillment of anyone's gift to that, to this program on it, will be happiness, blessedness, which is really which is converted in translated in truth, in terms of real happiness. You know, not just I won a prize, I got a trophy, now I'm happy. Well, that lasts about 10 minutes or so. But real happiness, which is this continual flow of the river of spiritual life that really will feed you through even times of struggle with health and things like that, that all of a sudden you become more healthy than you've ever been. And these are the kinds of things that are available if you are, you know, you're led to. I mean, nobody's forcing you. In fact, it's all voluntary is you to do that. And this is what happens. And you can actually see. That's why he says, try me now, Herewith. Go ahead, please, test me. And see if I will not open the windows of heaven. Yeah. So that's a little bit of truth that I found as being really substantially true. So we need that. Otherwise, Curtis will get a hard time keeping his equipment working. Things have to break and stuff. I remember seeing him going through so many pieces of gear that just got obsolete. Mm-hmm. Of course, we got, you know, really good audio now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We always comment about that every time we connect. Oh, my gosh. It's just like...
wonderful
just
audio.
So wonderful. The windows of heaven, that's beautiful.
Yeah, well, it's actually one. It's from the Bible. You can go look it up.
Oh,
and yeah,
it's from the Bible, right?
Yeah, but it's only, you know, it's not.
That's another thick book.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the interesting new books that I can link together with an important discovery of truth is The Harbinger. A while back, I first heard about The Harbinger, and I knew about certain things that he had spotted, but it's how he came to know them. And you really can only get an idea of how this man, Jonathan Cahn, who is a rabbi, but he is a, you might say, Christ, Jesus-believing rabbi. In other words, he believes in Hoshua ben Joseph, which is the name, his real name, Jesus Christ's real name. He was given 9 seals to unravel a special warning, and a warning that goes out to the United States, and the reason for 9/11. And the harbinger, of course, means warning. Or it was the harbingers would go out by the Hawaiian people had a harbinger. They would have a conch shell. And if you go to luau's in Hawaii, they have a lighting ceremony, and the guy goes out and he blows a conch shell, and then they light the torches, torch lighting ceremony. But in the ancient days, before Christianity, the Ali, the royalty, would walk down the road, and if the royalty were around, they had to warn the commoners that the royalty was around. So they'd blow the conch shell, and they'd make sure that if they were at night, they would light torches so that the people would see the royalty coming along with their guards. And anyone had their heads up, they'll get their head clubbed in. They'd kill them right there on the spot. So the harbinger would come, blowing the conch shell, warning the people, hey, you better take care of yourself, you know, get into the proper pose, you know, of humility, or just get out of the way. And this is the very same warning in terms of 9/11 was a warning, and it came as a harbinger, and this is put together supernaturally, in a sense, by a relationship between the author and what he calls a prophet. But by the operation of the prophet, I realize that this prophet is not the kind of human prophet that exists. If anyone should be called a prophet, it would more or less be Jonathan Kahn himself. The one that he was speaking to would be much closer aligned to what the Urantia book calls a teacher's son. And we are now in the age of the teacher's sons who will make their influence known on planet in various ways. And here is one example. I want everyone who can go to YouTube and put in Harbinger, and it's spelled H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R, and it's by Jonathan Kahn, and his last name is spelled C-A-H-N. And pick up that one that is about almost 8 hours, 7 hours, 55 minutes, which is Jonathan reading the book. And you'll be able to get the book. You don't even have to buy the book. You can just listen to it, much in the same way as you can just listen to a Rancha book if you wanted to, just downloading chapters or different papers. But in this case, Jonathan Kahn himself is doing the narration. So it's much nicer to hear the author. And he doesn't claim true authorship, he said, because it was not something that he made up. It was literally thrown upon him, and it's exactly how I described the push. The celestial push, it just pushes you forward into a position where you gotta do it. You just get this immense curiosity or immense drive to do this, and you go and discover what it is, and you sort of like smell it out, and it's exactly, and then you get more information, but it doesn't give you the whole picture, much like how the teacher sons don't teach you, they don't force feed you, they want you to eat, they want you to chew, they want you to then process and then swallow the truth. This is a good example of an example of a present day teacher son operating with a human and then bringing forth knowledge. And this has to do with the founding of the United States. I didn't know that the United States was founded on the very place where the Twin Towers or the new tower is. That is where George Washington actually took his oath of office. And that's where the blessing for the United States and became really under God, you know, in God we trust, the whole concept was born. It was a special, you might say, orchestration of celestial intervention and contract. But we have gone too far off that track. Yet, there's so much that needs to be preserved, like the Hawaiian race. It could just have been rubbed off the map, never to be remembered. Oh, you belong to some Polynesian group over there in the middle of the Pacific. Yeah, well, what kind of people were there? I don't know. They lived in grass shacks or something. You know, it could have been this, that, you know. But we have a full memory of that. So many of the good things are preserved. And then the very examples of what I just was talking about, the spirit of their connectivity to life and to the ground and to the planting and the farming led to the war, you might say, against the giant corporation Monsanto, and to one battle, having won a key battle. But of course, that doesn't mean that the war is over. The very same concept has to do with the entire planet, the entire human race. For those who are listening to this podcast, don't just listen to this podcast. I really challenge you to go listen or buy the book, The Harbinger, by Jonathan Kahn, as well as the newer revelations that come through. But the actual book, The Harbinger, has an actual dealing with what I recognize as a teacher son operating here on planet Earth. And that is significant because I myself dealt with a teacher son and he operated very similar. There were times he just didn't answer my questions directly, but he did lead me to the answer. And if the answer was close by, even so that it close enough so that he would lead me to the highest answer I needed to get answered, and that would be to have been taken to the secret place of the Most Highs, which was where the Vrondadek Most High Observers are. And these are the very same ones who have the authority to have sent the harbingers forward, the warnings. And we're sitting here right now at the position of turning the country around, the free world around, and understanding it doesn't work just by profit. It works by sharing and fairness and belief, and realizing that really the price for happiness cannot be purchased with money. The price for happiness really comes and flows from a divine source. That divine source can be poured out in so many different ways into our lives. And this is what is the highest joy of being in, you might say, the celestial community of divine sons. From little baby sons to fully grown up, high-level sons, such as the Danos themselves, teacher sons, as well as even higher ones. And overcoming the fallen liars. And there are many fallen liars that have remained on planet, and these are the demons. But they are subjugated under the truth bringers of light. And even if we become equivalent truth bringers of light, we will also be able to subdue these liars, these spiritual liars, because they tend to want to get into a mind through the portal of selfish greed and ambition. Well, in any case, again, I want to plug this book because it has a really interesting dealing with this one individual he called the prophet. And it sure sounds like it, that prophet was a teacher son walking planet Earth trying to bring forth knowledge of God's trying to save the one country that was founded in God we trust. And again, that was one of the very reasons I was taken to the New Jerusalem. And I wanted to find the fact that God was not dead. If he was, I didn't want to be alive because it was useless. It would be useless. But then he showed me so much and still maintains a lot of continual enlightenment. And I want to share that as much as I can. But in this case, read the book or listen to it.
I'll put a link on the listen page of where they can find this book.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds very interesting. Should listen to that.
Oh yeah.
On YouTube, that sounds nice to have the author just read it.
Also. Yeah, if you can. Yeah, there's right. So that's. That's really where I got the feeling that, man, this is a teacher son talking. This is exactly how they work. You know, and just the feel of it. And myself having dealt with real flesh and blood, you might say celestial teachers or guardians who look just as human as you or I, but operate at a higher level. And sort of disappear, you know. They give you warnings for, you know, and things like that, and help just change your direction a little bit here, a little bit there, so you just don't get shipwrecked. And that was like exactly, and he just moves through that. There's just one thing though that I don't agree with Jonathan, and that is that the United States is really Hebrew, really Jew, the land of Israel. I think really when it comes right down to it, we want to put Israel in its true place, which is to be to have been a witness of the divine on planet. And the United States was, in a similar sense, as a witness of the divine on planet, but has lost its way in its higher levels through corporate greed. And again, the corporation is considered like having the rights of a human being, but without the heart of a human being. Because of that, they have all this confusion in that sense. Even the Urantia book pointed out freedom and economic growth is not the answer. There's weaknesses. There are many good things, but there's weaknesses. And some of the weaknesses are just pure profit is not enough. It's got to be a curbing of the pure profit motive and an instilling of a divine motive, one of a higher source. And the purity of the genetic, the gene pool, is not to be tampered with. But the problem is the scientists that have done that, they think of themselves as God already. It's almost scary. Yeah.
It is scary. There's a lot of people who think they're God.
Yeah, but these guys are like, I mean, just knowing some of them, in the university here in Hawaii, University of Hawaii is one of the leading genetic experimenters in the world, and of course teaching that. So I don't know. I think there's good areas when genetic research will help, perhaps in curing cancer, things like that, which require a way of targeting the cancer cells genetic, like having little genetically adjusted soldiers that go over there within a person's body and kill those cancer cells. But there's other stuff that's just poisoning the people and for profit alone, and having a profit model that just forces it into the society, because you rally up all these profiteers, which are business people who are looking for making money. And the one that loses the most are the people who consume and the people who grow directly. So in any case, I have that comment right now. So anyway.
Well, I have a question for the Celestials.
Mm-hmm.
How do they truly feel about us becoming more technological and being able to blast ourselves safely off this planet and return and visit, not really the stars, but we're trying to visit places like our moon, and I mean, Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. Why? I don't know. It's going to take forever to get there. How do they feel about us leaving the planet and wanting to venture off into the stars?
Ah. This is Theodorak Saharan.
Hello.
You realize that we have always enjoyed your explorations and adventures. Many of these adventures, we do not have the great joy of doing because it is known, it is discovered. You know, we escorted one Christopher Columbus. It was interesting to see them make that maneuver. What an important factor in the development of planet Earth, the civilization and development, that it become more uniform in development. In similar sense, if one Elon Musk, as you mentioned, desires to venture much like a old world explorer to the planet of Mars, we'll be along with him, even as we also did on your journeys into space and to the moon, your moon, which we do have a small operation at.
I read where Charles Lindbergh, in his book, I have it on my shelf, I should just go walk back and get it and read. Well, here, let me just, I'll be right back. Okay. Now, I may have said this before, but some of the things that Charles Lindbergh said in his book about, well, you, Shaharon, you said that you helped Christopher Columbus and you will be along with Elon Musk when he ventures into space. Well, in Charles Lindbergh's book called The Spirit of St. Louis, on page 389, he says, and just in short, he says in his own words, the fuselage behind me becomes filled with ghostly presence. And the next page, he says, those ghostly forms. And on page 393, he says, the strange passengers I carry. On page 459, he says, the fuselage phantoms that rode behind my back. And then on page 465, he says, they vanished with that first strange touch of Europe and of man. And right after that, the next page, he said, I can't remember a single word they said. Where he told the story that he wasn't alone. And he knows, aircraft, that if there was anybody in the fuselage in the back, that the weight of their body would throw the center of gravity way off. And with a machine that travels through the air, you need to have that balance. So, Shaharon, were you also helping Charles Lindbergh across the ocean? Because that was 33 and a half hours. How could anyone stay awake? Plus, he was so excited he couldn't sleep the night before. And leading up to this, and that's a long way, and if you've ever, well, Michael, when you ride along the center of the country of the mainland, it's flat and it gets a little. There isn't too much to see. Where Charles Lindbergh going across the ocean, there wasn't much to see, and he said he fell asleep a few times, and he was woken by, he called it God. God woke him up.
He was not wrong. You must understand that when we operate in unison in understanding. You right now are vessels, somewhat connected, but somewhat disconnected. In all adventures that you take, we take an interest in, especially in your success. There are times in which it becomes daring and hard when you do come into positions of developing extreme danger, such as the development of terrible weaponry. That craft was not a craft ever as a weapon, but a craft used as a challenge, a human challenge. And it was important that we witness it. There were times in which his mind was made more attuned to our presence, but most of the time he was not aware of us. Mm-hmm. Celestial presence in your lives are similar. Do not think of him as being so unique. Understand it, that the numbers of you who have a higher destiny are indeed being escorted, much in the same sense as Lindbergh himself. Although your contribution into the society of this planet, your planet Urantia, in which you sojourn presently, this planet is a enriching area, both for you and for the destiny guardians themselves, your seraphic guardians themselves, your escorts. They will, and I will say we, as they are we, are also in benefit of this great challenge. And it is for you and us that your success is made true and real. Therefore, do not do anything for one's own glory. For when such things happen, our presences will not be detected, for it is adverse to our character to aid those who only want to become their own God and glorify their own selves. Such was not the case with Charles Lindbergh. He did it for the drive of doing it, under the drive of those who wanted to see the elevation of an entire industry that will shrink the planet. You see, if you look at all the aircraft in the world flying at one time, greatest number of all are your passenger and freight aircraft, not military. This was the goal, and it was accomplished. It made your world smaller and made thus your ascension process clearer. It would not be muddled in lore and in terms of the intangibles. Instead, you know by reality that the planet has been made smaller because of him. because of his success. If he did not make it, a great fear would have come upon your planet's consciousness, much as it did for flying the dangerous dirigible that became inflamed and fell. Instead, the motor craft was given confidence into your society, the airplane. Therefore, it was important that we escort him. I bid you farewell. It is enough that I have said.
Thank you, Sharon. That was very nice of you to come to actually be listening to us and hearing what we're saying. And so Michael Sharon said he helped Christopher Columbus.
He was there, he said.
He was there.
Yeah, they were there. Yeah.
But he also said he would be there if and when Elon Musk goes to Mars.
Yeah. They will be there. And they will be there with you as an individual. I think that was probably more important to hear. If you think of yourself for grandiose ideas, I believe he was kind of pointing out, they won't be.
They won't be?
They won't be. But what was the result of the success? I think it was pretty clear that you were saying that there's a lot of airplanes in the air now. if everybody thought that you go in an airplane, you're going to crash, you're going to die. Because Lindbergh died and everybody died, Nobody would fly for a long, long time. The old fears would come about if we were meant to fly, we would have been born with wings,
Well, we were able to make our own wings.
Well, we know that now, but the times change. And they needed to make sure that the times change correctly. Even if it didn't require that much, except keeping him awake.
These spacecraft and the knowledge of spacecraft and the magnetism, a lot of people said that their hair stood on end or their... it probably has a lot to do with magnetism.
Yeah.
I wonder if we really have that technology that we've built those and we're just still using, the heavier-than-air aircraft.
Well, electrostatics is what you're describing.
But, yes.
Yeah. In any case.
Electrostatics. The Earth has all this magnetism and it's...
Yes. Oh, in this case, always trying to.
They're always trying to get through, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they're big for money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm on a do not call, but they're the people who are non-profits can still call. Cold call people,
Good
on. Yeah. That's the penalty I pay because I give to different charitable organizations. And when you give to a charitable organization, you get on a list, and they like to revisit you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I found that many of the charitable organizations do provide a good service. It is a way in which it can be done, for so many, where if we just, it can be multiplied, efforts can be multiplied, But anyway, in this case, in our program, it's something that is really much different than you might see a church service. A church service sort of teaches Sunday school lessons and things like that, that are well known, documented, and repeated over and over and over again. But one of the truths that have been the dark side has tried to cover these truths and the truths that I uncover about our divine destiny. And this is what makes our program a little different, but in many areas very similar, because our citizenship that we're invited to requires kind of an understanding and training. And, they don't want to invite trouble. I think that could be a lot of trouble if the wrong kinds of people. In fact, the Bible does point out about the marriage supper of the Lamb, which is basically when the terrestrial population of our planet gets invited to participate in the celebration of our coming of age, you might say. But it required a certain attunement of heart, which presented itself with a garment of divinity, which we put on by humility and by the grace that comes from service, under the humble service, humble service, not, service which is paid for. And you're gifted with that. But if you were not with that on, in other words, it's something you cannot get. Remember that shirt you said that one of your people that you finally realized he was a fake? He had that fancy shirt. Well, this kind of garment.
Oh, yes. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was he claimed that shirt was outer space from off planet.
Off planet.
Yeah, but it's something common now. Everybody can get that type of fabric. But at the time, it was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. It was hardly, spread out in mass. Now, even I wear a shirt like that. But that garment is not like that. It really is something that really you put on from our inside. We wear it in our heart, and it reflects out and over us, and then we're gifted with a garment that matches. And that attunement is something that only comes by service. We don't get it because we bought it, one way or another. It comes by service. And those that didn't have that were actually... You're not allowed here. You're taken out, put out someplace else. It was called outer darkness, you might say. So, yeah. So that kind of gives a little bit of inclination that some of it there may be people who will venture out in private craft. Yeah.
Yeah, and they probably won't be conventional rockets like that technology is 1,100 years old from China.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rockets. And I have Elon Musk's Grasshopper on the site. It actually looks like a cartoon because there's no big, huge blast of exhaust or propulsion that we saw with the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's doing a better job, and he's ferrying supplies up to the International Space Station and back, and And when he gets his Dragon V2 spacecraft launched, he'll be able to take 7 people up to the International Space Station.
Yeah, you're going to be one of them?
Oh, I would love to just look at the Earth for days, just 90 minutes go around. I've heard astronauts say every time they look out the window, they have no idea where they are. They look down, they see mostly clouds.
Yeah.
But it must be quite an adventure up there.
I know my wife went up with Tan. He showed her a view. And she never forgot it. She said, if anything I can remember clearly, it's looking out and seeing Earth in, you know, its entirety. And the blue planet. So anytime she sees a photograph of, you know, our planet from outer space, looking at it, it brings back that feeling and memory of taking that ride with Tan. The intellectual. She calls Tan the intellectual.
Mm.
Yeah.
The intellectual.
The intellectual one, yeah.
Sounds like she had a lot of conversations with Tan. You seem to talk to Nella.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot.
Primarily. I mean, 90%. Yeah. But in terms of Tan, he, in fact, gave her something to write on. And he expected her to take notes. I remember asking, where did the notes go? I don't know. But he made me write them down, you know. He made me write this. Aren't you going to... You should write this down, you know. She should. So I don't know, you know. I said, what were you writing on? She says, I don't know, maybe a yellow pad? yeah. But she took one half of the rocking horse with her. And that was the pedestal in which the little rocking horse rocked. On top of that, you know, so I have the rocking horse, but I don't have the pedestal anymore.
What do you mean she took half of the rocking horse with her?
She asked for it before she went. And I told her where it was, and she came running in with the pedestal. And I said, yeah, that's only the pedestal. But she said, okay, anyway, I'm gone. So she left. Ran out the door, and I said, that was strange. Didn't literally I realized that I was right outside there. I'm going to pick her up, take her for a ride. The next day, I woke up, and the light switches weren't working, just like how it didn't work with me. I lost the control on the three-way switches. You know, the type of switch where you go in through one door, you turn on the light, and you go through out through another door, and you turn it off.
Oh, yeah, I know those three-pole switches.
Yeah, it did. All of them didn't work.
Most people don't know how to wire those things.
Yeah, but they were all burnt out, that open loop.
Oh, that's right. All your three-way switches burned out.
Yeah, when I was back in 72, my dad changed them all on. I couldn't understand why. And then when she went, they all did the same thing, and I had to change them out. And I said, it all happened again. So I said, I wonder if it's going to be that little burnt spot, you know, where nothing grows. Well, instead of a burnt spot, there were like 4 or 5 dots in a big one and a little one where the grass was burnt, died off.
Mm-hmm.
And then the grass grew right back over it. But now I don't have the kind of lawn I used to at the time. It was nice grass. But it's a different kind of grass now growing in its place.
Maybe next
more
year...
Wild grass.
Maybe next year your wife will like to tell us a little bit about Tan and her experience. Every time I ask you that, you go, I don't think so. Okay, we're back. It seemed like Skype just dropped us off. But I asked you... that possibly next year your wife would tell us anything about Tan or her experience.
No, it's not. Well, it'll happen when her memory opens up again.
I see. When her memory opens up.
Yeah, because right now, it's not the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe after we realize that the teacher's sons are here and arrived, and it requires, you know, the students also work with the teacher's sons. So those that have, like, Jonathan Khan, he's a student, but he actually is a emissary, you know, of the teacher, or the prophet, he calls the prophet, who never gave his name.
Hmm.
Yeah. So again, go back and if you can, listeners, just get to YouTube and take your time and listen to the whole story as narrated by Jonathan Khan, and realize the teachers are here. And it's at the dawning of the beginning of the great thousand-year age of the teacher sons, which will bring the planet into a position of great peace and prosperity and, you might say, happiness.
How did you hear about this book, Jonathan Khan?
Oh, when it first came out, there was some people who, in fact, Jonathan Khan himself, I saw him on a particular Christian program, and he made comments, and I went, but I never picked up the book, you know. But I did get the facts that he had pointed out that 9/11, the symbol of the great United States power, as a free world power, economic power of the world, was the Twin Towers. And they were actually on, you might say, holy land, which used to be part of that church. You know, all the areas around, all the buildings around the Twin Towers were kind of like, you know, pulverized a little bit. The windows were bashed in, some of the walls were broken up from when the towers fell. Had that big blast of dust. You don't know how the building turned to dust, but there was a lot of dust. And a tremendous push, and there was a tree over there, and it was a sycamore tree that blew down. And when that sycamore tree blew down, it blocked the blast of the original church where the United States was actually given a foundational beginning, you might say, a covenant, an agreement between the divine and an earthly institution, which ended up becoming the United States. And since that time, we've, as the United States, taken roles of, you know, becoming a world, tremendous world power, but we'll be, we don't watch out, be stripped of that. And it was part of his discovery in terms of uncovering all the mysteries behind 9 different seals that were given. These were like, you know how wax seals are embossed with a device, I forgot what you call it. You just push it into the wax and it leaves an impression.
Yes, you heat it up. No, the wax is already heated up.
Yeah. But they leave that impression. But this is, this is more not necessarily a wax seal. These were seals, but they were having a different shape to them. But it parallel. What it ended up doing was these 9 different seals. Once uncovered 9 harbingers, warnings that were given to Israel before Israel was destroyed as a country, and that was way back in let's see, 2,500 years ago, something around there. Hasn't recovered since, but the records are there, and the sycamore trees were cut down, and the arrogant pride statement that the United States will pull itself up, not because on God we trust, but in our own might we trust. And that is a big difference. And because of that, it reminds me of the one area which challenged me about Christ. When Christ was walking back to Jerusalem, they ended up passing the fig tree. And this was a regular fig tree, which was glorious and had all nice leaves and everything. And he reached in looking for any fruit, but that tree had none. And because it had none, it did not serve a purpose, not purpose of being the fig tree, because the fig tree's got to have figs. And when they returned and passed that fig tree was withered and dead. And then it just overnight. How did that happen? Well, it actually symbolized the fact that our planet was created to bring forth fruit. And the fruit of this planet are divine sons, everlasting souls, divine sons, to come forward and populate the universe that he created, the universe creator, for that very purpose. And if we don't bring forth the kind of fruit that is desired by the divine, then we have no purpose except to be withered and just tossed away. So we're needing continuous guidance, and we need to share that. And when they're like, we have the Urantia book, and it's something that we can attach to that, where a teacher son is interacting with a human being and bringing forth this kind of knowledge. Go ahead and read that book, The Harbinger.
Well, this this could close out the year for our podcast of 2014, and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday, January 6th, something like that. Yeah, January 6th. How does that sound?
Yeah, it's January 6th. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Okay.
All right, Michael.
All right.
Okay, aloha. Bye. Mm-hmm. Bye.